Hey guys, my name is Crystal Kenny, and I'm in love with creating. All things artistic and imagination involved. I'm an American girl who chased her creative dreams all the way to Paris, France, making a living using photography. This podcast takes you inside the stories of all the artsy folks I've met along the way and gives you that extra push to discover your creative gifts. The desire to create is deeply inside each and every one of us, and I give you the tools and inspiration to find a new way of living a more creative life. This is La Vie Creative, the podcast. Claudine Hemingway is a descendant of famed writer Ernest Hemingway. We bumped into each other at a party and decided to team up and dive deep into French history, but with a twist, by bringing a spotlight to those lesser-known creatives in France. This is History with a Hemingway. Welcome back to Paris History at Mickey Hemingway. I'm back with Claudine. We are heading back on the royal route today. We are talking about another French queen. And if you visited the Luxembourg Gardens, you probably have some connection to her because she built that big, beautiful fountain that you may have seen in the gardens and the palace that still sits there today. So we are talking about Marie de Medici, and I'll let Claudine take it from here.
Yes, Marie. She's very fascinating. And it depends on where you want to be from, what you call her. Marie de Médicis is the French way to say it. So, but you know, Medici, I think that's the Italian way. And then what's the other one? I don't know. The American way is
medical.
Yeah.
The American way. Mary Medical.
Mary Medical. She gets confused a lot with her distant cousin, Catherine de Medici, who was also a French queen. But today we're going to talk about Marie. Marie was born on April 26th, 1575. She was born in Florence, and she was the sixth child of Francois I of Medici and Joan of Austria. And when she was only 2 years old, her mom died while she was giving birth.
To another child.
Yeah. So her father quickly took up with his and married his mistress, which is quite shocking. That usually doesn't happen.
Oh, of course, never.
Yeah. So they ended up getting married, and when Marie was only 12 years old, her father and her stepmother died within hours of each other.
What the heck is that about? Were they poisoned?
Poison. Yeah. So they think it could have been poison. They also thought, well, it could have been like typhoid or something like that. But, you know, to die that quickly. And they think that it was his brother, Ferdinand, who basically then took over the throne.
I think there was definitely some foul play involved in that. That's too weird.
Foul play. Yes. So, you know, here, poor Marie is there. She's with her older sister for a little bit till ship her older sister off to get married. So she's just, you know, a petty palace in Florence, just kind of by herself. Her uncle ends up saying, you know, like all these different people had, you know, like they were like, oh, let's marry her off to this guy. Let's marry her off to that guy, which is, you know, as we know from our many other stories, that's what they do. But it wasn't until she was 25 years old. She's an old maid. I mean, 25, I mean, you're going to die. I mean, back then, like, you could have died 10 years later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they didn't live long back then. Why'd they wait so long to marry her off?
Well, she ended up, she was 25, and they decided that she would be marrying Henry IV of France. And Henry IV had been married already before to Marguerite, who was the daughter of Catherine de Medici.
He ditched her.
He ditched her. And so he ended up that was kind of a strange relationship. So he ended up marrying Marie. And at that time, they got married by proxy on October 5th, 1600. Yes, a common occurrence in Florence. And later on that month, she left to go to Marseille. To go meet him. Well, she got to Marseille, she gets off the boat, and he wasn't there.
Oh, man.
Wasn't there at all. So, you know, they keep going. They get to Lyon a month later. She arrives in Lyon on December 3rd. He's still like, you know, he's not there to greet his wife as she gets off, you know, the love boat.
The love boat. Doesn't sound like there's a lot of love going on there.
Not a lot of love. So it took 6 days until she actually saw him.
Did he decide he wanted to marry her? Or was this another one of those, like, we're making our country friends
things? It was basically, France had a lot of debts to the Medicis were, like, incredibly wealthy. They were all banking. And so they were, like, it's so much money. France actually had debts to them. To the family. And so as a way to relieve those debts, like once they did this, once they got married, those debts were erased. And then the Medici also paid Henry IV a dowry for her.
So she was basically like a paid bride.
Yeah.
A mail order bride.
Yeah. Which they all had dowries back then. They all came with something. So it wasn't, you know, exactly the mail order bride from, you know.
It wasn't 90 Day Fiancé. I've become obsessed with 90 Day Fiancé. I just have to add that in there. Anyway, she's on her Lovecraft.
Yeah. So after 2 months of them actually technically being married, they finally saw each other on December 9th. They didn't waste much time because the next September, she gave birth to Louis XIII.
Aha.
The Dauphin. So they had five more kids over the next 9 years. She, there was a bit of a time in there that they didn't have any kids because Henry IV, he's one of my favorite characters. He was known as the Ver Galant. He definitely had a lot of mistresses. There's many very high profile mistresses. There's paintings in the Louvre of these mistresses. There's one that he really wanted to marry this one gal, and they had already had a couple children together, and she died basically just shortly after giving birth, and then that's kind of when he went to go marry Marie.
Oh, so he lost his true love, his true mistress, and then he said, all right, I guess I'll settle my debts and marry this other chick.
Yeah, I guess I'll marry this one. So
so romantic.
They didn't have exactly the closest of a relationship. She spent a lot of time with her children, and she had been trying to convince him, you know, here they've been married now, they've been married for 10 years. And she was trying to convince him like it's always talked about the men, you know, the kings are coronated in Reims at the cathedral. And the women are always like, they're coronated, but it's a different ceremony. It's smaller. It's usually a Saint-Denis. Or someplace else. And it's not really like you don't follow, like you don't find it in the history books, like all the time, like, like the kings. So she wanted to be, you know, coronated a queen. And so he kept like putting it off, like, oh, we have to wait till we get done with this conflict and that conflict. Finally, he said, okay. And on May 13th, 1610, they had a coronation for her at the Basilique Saint-Denis, which is also where all the kings and queens are buried. But they finally had it. And they had this, you know, huge, huge event. The next day, they're back in Paris. Henry IV is leaving the Louvre. They were living at the Louvre at the time. He's leaving the Louvre. He's on Rue Saint-Honoré, and he goes down the street and he gets closer to what we know as Les Halles. There's a block in the road and they couldn't get their carriage through. And this crazy guy, Ravaillac, jumps into the carriage and stabs him and kills him.
Why?
So, well, he was like a real Henry IV. When he first started, he was a Protestant. And so there was a lot of issues. And that's where, you know, we'll have to get into that with the Catherine one. But Ravaillac was a religious zealot. And he thought he was told that he needed to kill him. But then there ended up being like, this was the day after she's coronated. So there was a lot of rumors like, is she involved in this? Is this a plot? Did she do this?
Yeah, that's scary.
Yeah. Again, she's not her distant cousin, Catherine. She probably did. But at the time, Louis XIII is only 8 years old. And he was actually at a convent. He was staying at a convent at the time. And on Rue des Grands Augustins, which is also where Picasso had a studio. And they ended up having to go there basically an hour after his father died and get him and basically be like, you are now the king.
Wow. At 8 years old.
At 8 years old. So because he was so young, Marie served as his regent, which means that basically she's in charge, you know, she's basically in charge of the country. And she's doing all this stuff on his behalf. And she really actually loved doing that. She loved being the power, having the power and being a child.
Finally.
She kind of ruled with an iron fist. And she was trying to do all this stuff to fix the relationships with Spain. She married Louis off to the Infante de Spain, Anne de Austria. So he was, you know, 12 years old, 13 years old when she, you know, were like, now you're going to marry this gal. So, you know, again, to unite these countries. And so when he turned 13 in 1614, he was old enough. At that point, you're old enough at 13 to take the throne. And she was like, nope. Nope, I don't think so. Not yet. We're going to wait a little bit longer.
And she could decide that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, she could decide that. And so then, you know, he was, I think, okay with it at the time. Then as he started to get older, you know, different people in the court started, you know, working his way and like, you know, because he's going to be the king. He will be the king of France. All of these different people are kind of working with him. So this man, Charles d'Albert, convinced him 1617 that he needed to move away from his mother and get rid of her. So Louis decided, he was like, okay, well, let's, you know, send her away. So he ousted his mom to the Chateau de Blois and down in towards the Loire and just basically was like, get out of here. So then he could now, you know, rule without his mother and her, you know, in his ear all the time.
That sounds terrifying, letting an adolescent run a country.
I know, doesn't it? I mean, like now I'm like, I think a 13-year-old, like, I don't know about that.
Oh my God. Yeah. That sounds so scary.
I mean, a 75-year-old, I don't know about that, but.
But 13. Ugh.
Yeah. So in February 1619, she's sick of this. It's been almost 2 years. She doesn't want any part of this. They make a rope ladder, throw it out her window and she escapes.
So she was a prisoner, basically.
Yeah, she was basically a prisoner. I mean, it's, you know, like they send you to a chateau, so it's not exactly like, you know, like Attica or something.
I want to be a prisoner in a chateau. I wouldn't be escaping from nowhere.
Yeah, but I mean, back then it's like, I mean, how great was it? Like you didn't have, like it wasn't warm. You didn't have running water. It didn't...
Like yeah, but now, you got like a giant garden. Paris was like disgusting back then.
If I get exiled to live in Versailles right now, I'd be like, sweet.
Yeah, no problem.
But so she was made it. She got out. She made it about 3 hours. And she got to a different chateau. And, you know, by this point, Louis knows all about this. And his mother's broken out and he's not happy. So she makes it to this other chateau. She stays there. The Cardinal Richelieu tries to do everything he can. Like he's, you know, the Cardinal Richelieu and Cardinal Mazarin, who comes in later, he, you know, they're, even though they're a cardinal, they were an incredibly, incredibly powerful position. He was very close with Louis XIII. And so he was trying to do everything he could to mend their relationship and fix it. And finally he got Louis to worn down a little bit to let her come back.
Oh, that was good work.
Yeah. So when she came back, she, you know, said, I'm just going to worry about, you know, I'm just going to spend my time worrying, you know, building my house. So after Henry IV died, she wanted to create something that reminded her of growing up in Florence. So over on the left bank in the sixth is what we know today, the Jardin de Luxembourg. Is a, you know, huge, the palace that when you go there today, there's the palaces there. And the palace, she had that built. So there was something small there before. It was actually, it's called Luxembourg because the Duke of Luxembourg once owned it and had a small house there. They tore it down. She tore it down.
She's like, we don't need this anymore.
No, nobody needs this little tiny thing. So he, you know, and the Palais de Luxembourg, it's not humongous, you know, like when you think of
palaces, yeah,
Chantilly or any of those. And she brought in a lot of artists and designers and stuff from Italy because she wanted something like the Petit Palais. So she brings all these people in and she starts working on it, and it ends up being, you know, what we know today. But in 1625, she decided, well, I want to move into this. And it wasn't even finished yet. So she lived on the first floor on the west end, and they were still building it and doing everything around her.
I love that she just focused on home decor when she couldn't run a country.
Yeah, she was just like, forget this. I'm going to do this now.
Yeah, I'm just going to build a house. No big deal.
Yeah. So she was using a lot of, you know, there was a lot of French artists that also were involved in it, but a lot of them were Italian. So she was having that built. She also at the same time had the gardens. And though the gardens, which is, you know, it's one of the most beautiful places in Paris, they once were 22 acres. They stretched all the way from what we know today as the Boulevard Saint-Michel to the Boulevard Raspail.
That was some garden. I wish they left it.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty big. She, you know, at the time when she first got it, she thought, oh, this will be great. You know, Louis the 13th could come here and he could ride and hunt and, you know, because it wasn't like it is, you know, what we see today.
We can,
you
know, be friends again.
We can be friends again. But it doesn't exactly work out that way. So
surprise, surprise.
I know. So and Richelieu and Marie ended up like they were able to patch their mother and son relationship enough that Marie sat on the king's council with Richelieu, and she tried to get along with him. She did not like Richelieu because he held so much power over her son, and you know she wanted to have that power. So she didn't like that. And so she tried to have Richelieu removed, and she was talking to other people and like, oh, he, you know, we need to get rid of him. Well, it all backfired on her because in 1631, she decided to leave the court, and Louis the 13th encouraged her and said, oh, you should go, you know, go to this chateau, go to the sun. So she was on her way there and she stopped in Germany in July 1631. And she thought, well, I'll stop here, you know, for the night, but it was a trap. Set by Louis.
Louis trapped his own mother.
Louis trapped his own mother. So he trapped her, kept her there. He stripped her of her title, her pension, everything.
Wow. That is some, like, how old was Louis during this time? Was he like still an adolescent?
Well, he would have been about 30 years old then. 30.
Okay. So he's an adult. So this is a long time of them having issues.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that he was lacking a father figure and all these evil men.
Yeah, he had. I mean, he was really close to his father when he was, you know, he was 8 years old when he died. But Henry IV was actually like this real doting father. Marie just wasn't. So even like after he died, it wasn't like, you know, she was this real doting, loving figure in his life.
Yeah. So he was just getting like all these power hungry men just kind of used him and put him against his mother, basically. And she kind of wasn't that great of a mother anyway.
No, she wasn't that great of a mother. So, you know, 1631, she's out of France. She's out of her palace. It still isn't finished in 1631. She ends up going to, she goes to Germany, and then she lived for about 11 more years and she died of pleurisy in 1642.
What is that?
It's like an infection of the walls of the lungs.
Ooh.
And of course, when I looked it up, you know, you read all these things and you're like, oh my God, I have that.
Yeah. Never look up what you have because you just always have cancer.
Yeah. Everything. I was like, oh my God, I think I have that.
Yeah. It's like my ear hurts. You have cancer.
Yeah. But so when she died, she left her palace and the, you know, what we know as the Jardin de Luxembourg, she left it to her other son, Gaston.
Was Gaston nicer? Did we like him more?
I think, yeah. I mean, I think on any of them where it's like, you know, there's the, what do we call Prince William and Harry? It's the heir and the spare, you know?
No, the heir and the spare.
I think that when you're not the Dauphin and you're not the king, it's kind of like, well, that's the other kids. Let's marry him off to somebody.
Yeah, we can get along.
Yeah. But she left it to her other son.
Was that a problem? Were they like upset about that?
I don't think so. I mean, I think Louis is the king. He probably could have just taken anything he wanted anyway.
Yeah, I'd be like, never mind, brother. This is mine.
But you know, the gardens over time, they started to be, they were first designed by a Florence engineer, Thomas Francine. He originally designed it because they were trying to do all, you know, like getting water into the city at that time was hard. And so they were doing all of these like basically building all of these aqueducts and stuff to get water to flow into the city. Mm-hmm. That's why you also have all those lakes and ponds and stuff out at Versailles, because they were trying to do everything they could to get, because there wasn't really any water then. And so he ended up creating that. He also he was the first one to design the amazing Medici fountain. That was him. Originally, that she wanted something to be like the grottos that she had. Have you been to the Petit Palais
yes.
in Florence? I mean, I don't think I would go there and be like, oh my God, I feel like I'm at Jardin de Luxembourg.
Yeah, it's not the same.
I mean, I think it's probably changed a lot over time, but you know, Italy, it's all about like the grottos and the, so when you look at this, when you look at the fountain today, what was built for Marie was basically just the facade of it. It didn't mm-hmm. have the statues. It didn't have any of that. It was just basically the four columns, and it had the niches in there that had some different smaller statues in it. And yeah. then it had the crest, like the Medici crest on the top, which is still there today.
Yeah, I love that fountain. And it's funny how so many people miss it because it's kind of tucked away. It's not yeah. in like the middle of the park. And I've done so many photo shoots there, and they're like, we didn't even know this was here. I mean, it's so big and beautiful.
And they have like that ivy, like those ivy swags, the way that they have yeah. on the side. It's so
they make like fencing, like yeah. beautiful rope fencing.
I know, it's so pretty. But originally the statue, it actually sat on the road right on the other side of the fence. If you're standing and looking at the fountain and you're looking up at those buildings that are on the other side of it, that's the Rue de Medicis. And originally, the statue sat more on basically where a lot of those buildings are now. It was 100
feet away. Oh, so they moved it.
And so Mr. Houseman, when he came through and was like cutting through the city, creating all these grand boulevards, it was going to be lost. And so luckily, they just decided to move it, thankfully.
Yeah.
They just moved it the 100 feet. And then later on in the 1860s, when he did this, they moved it in. And then, but at that time, it didn't even have the water basin. Like that was added like
later.
The best parts about it. And it's that optical, like if you stand there because of the way they built it, it looks like it just has this optical illusion to it. Mm-hmm. If you look at it from the end. But in the 1860s, and they added the statues that are there. They added the statues that are in the niches. They put the statue or the fountain on the back of it, which is one of my favorite secret things that most people don't walk to the back. But it's a fountain that was actually on another fountain that was actually going to get demolished as well by Houseman. And they saved it and put it back on the back of the statue.
Oh, so they just combined the two.
Yeah.
That's the thing about monuments. Yeah. They don't go to the back of them a lot. Tourists never go to the back of things.
No, it's like one of my favorite things to take people on a tour. I'm like, oh, and then there's this one. It's Lita and the Swan. The garden now is filled with a bunch of statues and sculptures. And if you look up the terrace, if you're down below it and you're standing at the basin where the kids are with the boats, on the upper terrace, there's 20 different statues of the famous women, basically, in French history. There is a statue of Marie there. There is not one of Catherine. There's
Catherine, dark spot on French history.
Yeah, and I was there one day, and somebody was like, they go, which one is this? Is this Marie? And so I actually heard them talking, and they were Americans, and I said, actually, that's Marie de Medicis, and I gave them like a 5-minute history lesson.
Oh, that's so cute. You should just hang out in the park and tell people things.
Yeah, it's hanging out by the statues. That's not weird. But, it's amazing. The other thing that Marie did was when she was alive, she commissioned Peter Paul Rubens to create four different paintings for her that she wanted to have in the Luxembourg and have about basically her life. She loved them so much, she asked him to make 19 more of them. They're called the Medici cycle. And he made them, and they're basically all different events of her life. So there's one of April 26th, when she was born. There's one of her, like the marriage by proxy. There's ones of the coronation. There's ones like it's pretty amazing. And they're all in one room in the Louvre, in the Richelieu wing on the second floor. And you could go up there, and there's not usually a lot of people in there. And they're just like, some of the paintings are just humongous. They're so big. Rubens, you know, it was her way too of rewriting her life a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she kind of picked the moments, you know, they picked some of these moments. She made the moments look like maybe a little bit better than they actually were.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was glorifying her. It tried to paint this picture of their wonderful marriage that the two of them had, which wasn't also a whole lot of, you know, truth to that.
It was a lie.
And even like, you know, with her son, like there's one of them that's basically their reunion and it has them on a boat and then she's on there and he's on there. And there's, you know, there's a lot of allegorical figures and mythical figures. He put a lot of things in there. Like there's always the orb in a lot of the paintings. That means it's kind of like the, you know, a lot of the kings would hold those. It's like, you know, you're holding the world. So there's all of these things, but the room, it's one of my favorite places to just go and just be in there for like an hour.
It sounds like the guy made a lot of money on that job.
Yeah, I mean, to make 24 of those. I don't even know if they were honestly finished before she, like, I don't think they were finished by the time she was exiled.
So this is what happens when you're not allowed to rule the country anymore. You build a castle and just focus on, like, artwork on your walls.
Yeah, and rewrite your life.
Yeah, rewrite through the paintings, make it all happy, live in a fantasy because everything was terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of like you look at the one, like the one of her at the coronation's pretty amazing. Like she's there, you know, in this very regal robe and, you know, the cardinals, like, holding the crown over her head. And Henry IV is up in like a little box kind of up above looking down. And then they have like, you know, these allegorical figures that are basically dropping gold coins on people. And, you know, I mean, it makes it look like, wow, that was amazing.
Her life was awesome. This was Instagram before Instagram.
Yeah, it was. It is pretty cool. Like if you look at that one specifically and like, you know, here's this allegorical, looks like an angel basically dropping these coins. And then there's people, if you look kind of between past her between like two other people, you see these other people that are like basically like, reaching up trying to catch the coins.
I love this. I don't think I've ever seen that room. I need to go visit.
Yes, I'll give you a little tour.
Yeah, give me a tour because that's fascinating. I mean, her life was really sad in a lot of ways. I think I want to rewrite my history too.
Yeah, I think, I mean, exactly. I mean, if you have the chance to do that, why not?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but she, you know, like it's funny, like we were talking about before, you know, I was always kind of fascinated with her just because, first of all, it was because of the Palais de Luxembourg. And then I saw all these paintings and then I really started to look into it. And then I realized, I'm like, oh, we have the same birthday, April 26th. We have the same birthday. And then I looked at it some more and, you know, I'm not married anymore. But when I was like, that's our wedding. That was my wedding date. So now,
that's so weird. Oh my God, she's your sister from another lifetime.
Yeah. So, you know, in a couple weeks, you know, come July 3rd, every year, it's like, well, is this going to be the day?
No, don't think about it. You're putting that in the universe.
I actually never actually have. Like one day I was like, I wonder when it was she died.
How did she die? Well, you looked up how, and you don't have the lung disease. Stay away from WebMD. Very scary place.
Yeah. But dangerous. Yeah, it's like, oh, we have all these dates in common, but that's it.
That's it. Well, I loved learning about Marie today, and I'm sure another day we will talk about Catherine, her distant cousin, which is a whole different scheme of things and a lot worse.
Yeah, there's some witchcraft and there's some killings and all sorts of fun stuff that she did.
Lots of dead children from what I read.
Yes. Yeah, there's always dead children back then, unfortunately.
That's a lovely note to end on. Until next week.
Until the next one.
Thank you, Claudine, and I'll see you next week.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to Paris History of Beck A. Hemingway. If you want to find out some more, you could always find me on my Instagram page, Claudine Bleu Blanc Rouge, and that's B-L-E-U, as in the French way to spell it. And each day I post a daily history lesson about a person or a place or something in Paris, or it's lots of fun facts. And then also at claudinehemingway.com, where you can also sign up for my newsletter there.